When Malcolm and the others rode into town the next morning, approaching as planned from opposite ends of Central Avenue, Cheyenne was in the middle of its mid-morning commerce cycle. At the Wyoming Freight and Transport Company, three wagons were backed up against the loading dock, taking on freight that had come into town by train, but would have to be delivered to the various destinations by wagon. Malcolm dismounted in front of White's Apothecary, then started walking toward the bank. He saw Pettigrew approaching the bank from the other side. Arriving at the bank door simultaneously, they went inside without acknowledging each other. Malcolm stepped up to the table while Pettigrew, holding a $20 bill, went up to the teller's window and stood in line as if waiting to make change. There were four other customers in the bank, three men and one woman. The others came as planned. When all seven were in the bank, Malcolm nodded at Pettigrew, who nodded at the others. Pettigrew drew his pistol, which was the signal for all to draw their weapons.
Everybody put their hands up! This is a bank holdup!
Oh no!
Open that safe!
I don't know the combination, only Mr. Snellgrove knows.
Who's Snellgrove?
He isn't here.
You're lying, Mr. Lazenby. That gentleman is Mr. Snellgrove.
Mr. Malcolm? It's you? You're with them, but you were going to make a deposit.
I decided I would rather make a withdrawal.
How the hell does he know your name?
It's quite simple, Mr. Pogue. I told him my name.
Well, that's a dumb thing to do.
Mr. Snellgrove, I appreciated the guided tour you provided for me yesterday. Now, if you would be so good, sir, please open the safe for us.
No.
Open the safe or I will kill you.
What would that accomplish? If I'm dead, then no one will be able to open the safe.
You're right.
Pettigrew pointed his pistol at one of the male customers.
Open your safe or I'll kill this man here.
I have no intention of opening the safe. God in heaven, man, you murdered him!
No, Mr. Snellgrove, 'tis you who committed the murder. You didn't pull the trigger true enough, but you were given the opportunity to cooperate with us, and you refused to do so. That sealed the man's fate.
How could someone like you be in league with people like this? You aren't like them.
I would advise you to cooperate. My friend does seem quite determined to see you open the safe.
No.
Pettigrew pointed his pistol at the customer nearest him.
No, please. I beg of you. I have a wife and children.
Did you hear what he said? He has a wife and children. You want to be responsible for another one of your customers getting killed?
No, please.
Maybe your customers don't mean anything to you. Well, I reckon I'm shooting the wrong people. Maybe I should kill your friend here.
Pettigrew pointed the pistol at Lazenby.
No, wait, I'll open the safe for you.
You will open the safe. I thought you didn't know the combination. Tsk, tsk, Mr. Lazenby. It would appear that you lied to us.
That's what Mr. Snellgrove told me to say if anything like this ever happened.
Lazenby, don't do it.
Mr. Snellgrove, I'm not going to die for $20 a week.
With shaking hands, Lazenby walked back to the safe and began turning the combination. It took only a few turns. Then the big vault door swung open.
Very good, Mr. Lazenby.
Malcolm produced a cloth bag from under his jacket and threw it to Lazenby.
Now, if you would be so good, please put all of your money in here.
Lazenby, you're fired!
I can get another job, Mr. Snellgrove! I can't get another life!
When the bag was full, he hurried up and handed it to Malcolm.
Thank you, Mr. Snellgrove. Would you kindly step into that safe, please?
What? What do you mean, step into the safe? What are you talking about?
I know that 'tis a Scottish brogue I have, but I'm for certain that you understood me. Step into the safe.
You don't understand. I could smother in there.
Aye, you could indeed. Unless Mr. Lazenby opens the safe door in time to let you out. Oh, but wait. He can't do that, can he? You just fired him.
Get in!
Shaw leapt over the counter, grabbed Snellgrove by the shoulders, and shoved him toward the open door of the safe. Chalk pushed him into the safe.
Lazenby, get me out! You aren't fired! I take it back! You aren't fired!
Next. Mr. Lazenby.
Yes, sir.
Do not let him out until we have left.
Yes, sir.
Shall we, gentlemen?
Just as the outlaws reached the door, the man who had begged for his life drew a pistol from some unseen place. The bullet hit Garcia in the back, just to the left of his right shoulder blade. He stumbled, but did not fall. Pettigrew turned his pistol on the customer. Pettigrew ran and jumped on his horse.
Let's get out of here! Shoot away, boys! Shoot everything that walks, slithers, or crawls!
With pistols blazing and the townspeople running, the 9 bank robbers thundered out of town. Though not without shooting down 2 more citizens. Elmer Gleason, bathed, shaved, his hair cut, fingernails trimmed, and wearing some clothes Duff had provided, sat on the porch drinking a cup of coffee.
Ooh, I forgot how good coffee was!
How long has it been since you had a cup?
I don't know! I don't know what year this is.
It's 1887.
1887? Oh, well now, I'm going to have to do some ciphering here. And 1876 ain't going to mess with them 18s. 87, 76. I reckon it's been 11 years.
And you've lived in that mine all those years?
Pretty much. Some years I spent some time with the Cheyenne Indians. They married me one of them, but she died when she was birthing our young'un. And the young'un, he up and died a couple days later. So I left. I wandered around a bit, then come back to the mine. Not sure when that was, but I know I spent 6, maybe 7 winters there.
Mr. Gleason, you said you killed Lonnie Post and Sam Hodges in self-defense. What about Arnold Brown? Did you kill him in self-defense, too?
I ain't never even heard of a fella named Arnold Brown. Who is he?
According to Mr. Guthrie, he's a man who went out to the mine to look for gold and has never been heard of since.
So that was his name. Yeah, there was a fella come out there not too long after I killed them 2 men, but I scared him off. He never come back.
How much gold have you found?
Who wants to know?
Me.
Oh. Well, I ain't never found much more than you found, but I know it's there. I can smell it.
But in all the years you spent here, you never found it.
Now, that don't mean it ain't there.
Why didn't you file on it?
I never got around to it. Now you're telling me that this here fella owns it?
He does own it. He filed a claim on this land and all its environs.
Environs? Oh, damn. That means he owns the mine?
Yeah.
Well, then... ain't much more I can do, is there?
You can sell the mine to me.
What do you mean I can sell it to you? Didn't you just tell me you already own it?
Aye, but that doesn't mean you have no claim whatever. You were here first.
Oh, but I wasn't first. No, it was either the Spanish or the Indians that was first.
When you tried to sell it before, how much did you ask for it?
I wanted $500, but I couldn't get nobody interested in it.
Suppose I give you $200 and 20% of anything the gold mine ever makes.
Why would you do that?
Because I'm more interested in getting a ranch started than I am in poking around in a mine. In this way, you could keep looking. Only you'd be working for me, and you wouldn't have to eat bugs and rats and like that.
I don't mind telling you, that sounds pretty good to me.
We'll build you a cabin down by the mine. You can live there, and anytime I'm gone, you can keep an eye on the ranch.
Sonny, you got yourself a deal.
Gleason spit into his hand and proffered it. Duff looked at the extended hand, and then he looked at Falcon.
If you want to close the deal, you have to shake his hand.
Duff extended his own hand.
You have to spit in yours, too.
My word, Americans be quaint people indeed.
Duff grasped Gleason's hand in his. The pain in Garcia's wound had eased somewhat, and a warming numbness had set in. Garcia was thankful for the numbness because it allowed him to stay in his saddle as they rode away from the bank holdup. but he had lost a lot of blood and was getting weaker and dizzier with every passing moment. By the time they rode into the tiny town of Ty Siding, Garcia was barely able to stay in his saddle.
Hey, Malcolm, Garcia's not going to make it if we don't find a doctor pretty soon.
McKenna was riding alongside Garcia, as well as leading Garcia's horse, because Garcia needed to hold on to the saddle pommel with both hands just to keep from falling off.
He'll be all right. He was just hitting his shoulder.
No, he ain't going to be all right if we don't find us a doctor soon to patch him up. He's bleeding like a stuck pig.
Maybe we can find a doctor here.
We don't have time. You know damn well they got a posse together by now.
Well, we rode out of town heading east. We're west of town now. It's going to take them a while to figure out we swung around and come back to the west. And I'm telling you, Garcia can't go on much longer if we don't get him to a doctor.
Hell, as much blood as he's lost, he's probably going to die anyway. Seems to me like taking him to a doctor just to tell us that Garcia's going to croak is just going to slow us down.
Oh, what kind of thing is that to say?
Yeah, well, I'm with Pope. I don't plan on getting myself caught by the law, because I'm wasting my time trying to save a Mex who's more likely going to die anyway, no matter what we do.
What if it was you that was shot?
If it was me, I wouldn't be complaining about it.
If you notice, Shaw, he isn't complaining. We'll find a doctor.
If it was up to me, I'd just leave him there.
We're going to stay with him.
Anyway, maybe we can get something to eat there.
How are we going to get something to eat?
More than likely the doctor is married. We'll have his wife fix us some food.
Ty Siding was a quiet, sleepy little town, with very few people out in the street and even fewer who paid any attention to their presence. Malcolm saw a boy of about 17 painting a fence. Separating from the others, he rode over to him.
Good morning, lad.
The young man didn't reply vocally, but he nodded his head at Malcolm. Then he looked by him at the eight other riders.
Are you fellas cowboys looking for work? Because if you are, you ain't likely to find nothing here. Mr. Lyman Bird, he owns a ranch twixt here and Wallback, and I was riding for him, but he let a bunch of us go last month. Said he couldn't afford to keep us on.
Tis grateful I am, lad, for your report on the availability of employment. But our quest is to find a doctor.
Oh, we ain't got no real doctor here, except for Dr. Tillman. And he's an animal doctor is what he is, but seeing as we ain't got no doctor, well, he sometimes treats folks, too.
And where is he domiciled?
What?
Where may I find this doctor?
Oh, well, he has a house. It's about a mile out of town. Just keep going on that way till you run out of buildings and houses, then keep on going some more till you come to a white house on the right side of the road. It's got a sign out front that has a picture of a horse on it. That's in case you can't read the words to say veterinary doctor.
Thank you, lad. You've been most helpful.
Malcolm rode back to join the others.
Did you find a doctor?
In a manner of speaking.
What does that mean?
I found a doctor.
Following the directions the boy gave him, Malcolm led the men to the doctor. His office, which was also his home, was a low, single-story building that sat at least 100 feet back from the road. A wisp of wood smoke rose from the chimney, carrying with it the aroma of frying pork chops.
This is it.
Wait a minute, what do you mean this is it? Can't you read? This here's a veterinarian.
There are no physicians available, but according to the lad in town, the veterinarian also treats people.
An animal doctor?
What choice do we have, McKenna?
Yeah, I reckon you're right.
There's no need for all us to go inside. I'll go in with Garcia and McKenna. The rest of you move around behind the house. I don't want anyone riding down the road and getting curious as to why so many horses are here.
Wait a minute! I thought we was going to get something to eat here.
Yeah, Pogue's right. That's the only reason I come. I sure don't care nothing about the Mexican. He can die as far as I'm concerned, but I ain't going to wait around outside if there's a chance we can get us something to eat inside.
All right, Johnny, you and your brother take all the horses around back. The rest of you can come in with us.
What about us getting something to eat?
We'll bring something out to you. Let's go.
They rode up to the front of the house, then dismounted. That is, all but Garcia. Now too weak to dismount on his own, he sat in his saddle until McKenna and Moran helped him down from his horse. The Hill brothers took the horses and moved them around back as the remaining seven men stepped up onto the doctor's front porch. Malcolm didn't bother to knock. He just pushed it open. McKenna and Moran helped support Garcia as they walked into the house.
What is this?
The doctor looked up from a chair where he was reading the newspaper. His wife was standing at the stove frying pork chops, and she looked around in alarm as well.
Doctor, please forgive us for startling you. We were doing some target shooting a bit earlier, and one of our number was inadvertently shot. 'Tis wondering, I am, if perhaps you could patch him up so that we may complete our journey.
And maybe while you're at it, your woman could fix us something to eat.
My woman?
That one there, standing over by the stove.
She is my wife, sir.
Yeah, that's what I said. Have her cook us something to eat. Them pork chops smells pretty good.
You do know, do you not, that I'm a veterinarian? I'm not a people doctor. What makes you think I could take care of your friend?
Animals, people, they're all pretty much the same thing when they got a bullet in them. I seen bullets got took out of a horse, and I seen bullets got took out of people. Looked pretty much to me like there wasn't no difference.
You aren't taking target practice, were you? Are you outlaws on the run?
What if we are? Doesn't the Hippocratic Oath say that you have to treat him anyway?
I told you, I'm a veterinarian. I don't take the Hippocratic Oath. That's for physicians. Never mind. Take him over to the bed and let me take a look at him.
Moran and McKenna laid Garcia on his back on the bed.
Where was he shot?
In the back, just inside his shoulder blade, I think.
The doctor opened Garcia's shirt.
That's not good.
What?
The bullet didn't go all the way through him. It's still inside. I need you to turn him over so I can have a look. And do it carefully. It's going to be quite painful for him.
With help from McKenna and Moran, Garcia was turned over.
Well, he's lucky in one thing. I don't think there's any festering. But I expect he's lost a lot of blood. And like I said, the bullet's gonna have to come out.
Hell, why bother? He's going to die anyhow, ain't he?
Probably, but it's not an absolute. I can at least try.
You want to waste your time on him? Go right ahead.
Turning, Pogue saw the doctor's wife standing close by.
Lady! I ain't seen you put no pork chops in that skillet.
I don't have any more pork chops.
Well, what do you got?
Fix them some bacon, Pearl. We got a whole slab of bacon.
Is bacon all right?
Hell yes! Just get to cooking it.
I have a basket of fresh eggs, maybe 2 dozen or more. I can scramble them. And I have a couple of loaves of bread I baked yesterday, if that's all right. I had no idea there'd be so many to feed.
Woman, quit talking so much and get to cooking.
And don't forget, there are 2 more outside.
Actually, whenever my husband doctors a person, I have to help. I'll cook you some food as soon as he's through attending to his patient.
Pogue pulled his pistol and pointed it at Garcia, who by now had passed out.
Well, hell, if that's all that's stopping you, I can take care of that. I'll just shoot the son of a bitch now and get it over with.
The doctor stepped between Pogue and Garcia.
If you shoot him, you're gonna have to shoot me too.
That's all right by me.
And me.
Pearl stepped in front of her husband.
I don't have no problem with that either.
No, Pogue. You ain't gonna shoot either one of them.
Pogue looked at the defiant doctor and his equally defiant wife for a moment longer. Then he eased the hammer back down.
All right. Have it your way, McKenna. You fix the food.
Why me?
Why you? 'Cause you're the one who was so determined to get Garcia to a doctor. Now fix the damn food like I told you to.
All right. All right.
Doc. You got yourself a brave woman there. She's pretty, too. Makes a fellow wonder how someone like you ever managed to come up with a woman like that.
When the doctor didn't answer, Pogue smiled at them both, then left them and walked over to join the others. The doctor slapped Garcia in the face.
Hey, what'd you do that for?
I have to wake him up. I have to give him some laudanum. He's gonna need it when I start probing for the bullet.
Garcia opened his eyes, and the doctor held the bottle to his mouth.
Here, drink this.
Garcia took the liquid, then closed his eyes again.
Help me get his shirt off, Pearl.
The doctor and his wife removed Garcia's shirt. The doctor picked up a long, slender instrument and began probing for the bullet.
Food's ready.
As the doctor and his wife worked on Garcia, the others began to eat the bacon and scrambled eggs McKenna had cooked for them, totally unconcerned with the ordeal Garcia was going through.
Mr. McKenna, would you be for making a couple of bacon and egg sandwiches and taking them out to the Hill Brothers?
Yeah, all right.
How are you progressing, Doctor?
We're doing quite well, thank you. The bleeding has stopped, and digging for the bullet hasn't initiated any new hemorrhaging.
Good. Continue with your task.
For the next several minutes, the doctor and his wife bent over the unconscious form of the wounded outlaw.
Good. I was worried about secondary atelectasis, but despite the bullet insult, I don't think the lung has collapsed.
I don't think so either. He seems to be aspirating normally.
After what seemed like several more minutes, the doctor dropped the bullet into the pan of warm water.
So, you're finished up, are you, Doc?
I've got the bullet out.
Good. Hurry up and get him patched up so we can put him back on his horse and get out of here.
Are you insane? If you move him now, it'll kill him.
Doctor, you don't seem to understand our situation. We must be going. We can't stay around while Mr. Garcia recovers.
Well, then by all means, go. Leave your friend here. I'll take care of him until he's recovered.
And, no doubt, turn him over to the law.
Suppose I do turn him over to the law. Isn't incarceration preferable to dying?
You ain't never been incarcerated, have you, Doc?
Of course not.
It ain't necessarily preferable. Come on, Garcia, get up.
Oh.
Garcia blinked his eyes a couple of times, then closed them again.
He can't even hear you now. He's passed out.
Why don't we leave him here, like the doc said?
We can't do that. He knows where we're going. He might talk.
Garcia won't talk. He's a good man. He won't talk.
We killed people in that holdup. That means if we get caught, we're gonna hang. If they tell him they won't hang him if he helps them find us, are you telling me he won't talk?
We didn't kill people in the holdup, Pettigrew. You did.
Malcolm listened to the discussion between the two men, and he knew that there was only one thing to be done. He walked over to the bed and picked up a pillow, then pushed it down over Garcia's face.
What are you doing? Stop it! You're killing him!
Doctor, do you want your wife to risk her life to save an outlaw?
Pearl, come away.
But John, don't you see what he's doing?
Yes, he's killing the patient. But better him than us.
You have more sense than I gave you credit for, John.
Malcolm pulled the pillow away. Garcia's eyes were wide open but blank, and his face was slightly purple.
John, if you would, sir, please confirm for me that he's dead.
The doctor picked up Garcia's wrist and felt for a pulse. There was none. Then he put his hand to the carotid artery.
Mr. Garcia is dead.
Pearl crossed herself.
Thank you, madam. I'm sure that Mr. Garcia needs all the praise he can get.
I have to hand it to you, Malcolm. I didn't think you had it in you.
Let's get out of here.
Malcolm started toward the back door, and the others obeyed instantly. Falcon was tightening the cinch strap on Lightning as Duff stood by watching.
You sure you don't want me to stay a while longer? If this man Malcolm finds you, I might come in handy. Besides, I can help you build the barn.
Falcon, you've been more than helpful, but the time has come when I must stand on my own. Besides, I've hired Mr. Gleason. As far as any further construction is concerned, I think the two of us can get the job done.
I'm sure you can as well. It looks like you've made a fine start.
Gleason came out of the house carrying a little cloth bag. He handed it to Falcon.
Well, this is in case you get hungry on the train. I baked you something.
Oh, Mr. Gleason, you didn't have to go to all that trouble.
Hoo-hoo! You afraid I cooked you up a rat? Ha! I didn't always eat rats and bugs and such. You know, before I got the gold fever, I was a belly robber for Mr. Richard King on his ranch down in Texas. And I was a good one, if I say so myself. No, I cooked you up a batch of sinkers. I think you're gonna like them.
Falcon opened the sack and looked down inside. As the aroma hit him, he smiled. Then he pulled one of them out and took a bite.
Wow, Mr. Gleason, this is delicious. Cousin, if he can't drive a nail for you, he's worth keeping around just for his sinkers.
I don't know what a sinker is.
Well, some people call them donuts.
Falcon broke off a piece of the one he was eating and handed it to Duff.
Here, try this.
Oh, Mr. Gleason, I do hope you didn't give all of them to Falcon.
Oh, Sonny, do you think I don't know where my bread's buttered? I gave him a few, but I kept most of them back.
Duff, I think I'm leaving you in good hands. You know how to get a hold of me if you need me.
He's a good man.
I too have found that to be so.
Biff Johnson had just finished tapping a new barrel of beer, and he held a mug under the spigot, then operated it to see if it was working properly. A steady stream of golden liquid flowed from the spigot. So, satisfied that the flow was all right, he shut it off, then took a sip to see if the beer tasted all right. It was necessary that he do that because the beer came by train from Denver to Tracy, then by wagon from Tracy up to Chugwater, and sometimes it got a little stale. But that wasn't the case now, because this beer was fine. Biff was putting the mug in a tub of water when the eight men came into his saloon. Though that wouldn't have been unusual during the cattle season, it was unusual now, and he looked up at him in curiosity.
Ah, good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to Fiddler's Green.
We've ridden long and hard, and we're thirsty.
The one who spoke was a small man with nostrils so prominent that they reminded Biff of a pig snout. He chided himself for having such a thought, though. After all, these were customers.
Well, gentlemen, I have just the thing for thirst. I have only this moment tapped a new keg of beer.
At the marshal's office, Russell Craig, a man in his early 60s, had just poured himself a cup of coffee when young Fred Matthews came into his office. Morning, Fred.
Marshal, I think them folks that robbed the bank in Cheyenne is in town.
What? How do you know?
Well, there's eight of them, and, well, they just have that look about them.
All right, Fred. I'll take a look into it.
Marshal Craig watched Fred walk back down the street to the mercantile store. Then he went over to a hook on the wall and took down his holster and pistol. Strapping the gun belt on, he pushed through the door of the marshal's office and started toward Fiddler's Green. Back at Fiddler's Green, Lucy and Peggy, the only two bar girls remaining since Annie had been killed, were sitting at a table in the corner having a cup of coffee. It was just 10:30 in the morning, and their normal work hours didn't start until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But they had no place else to go, and they often just relaxed and visited with each other before starting to work.
Peggy, let's get out of here.
Get out of here? Where you want to go?
I don't care. Anywhere but here. I don't like the looks of this.
What? You mean all these men?
Yeah. There's something not right about this.
Marshal Craig came into the saloon, then stopped and stood for just a moment inside the door. Malcolm and the men with him looked around at him.
Liam Pettigrew, I thought you were in prison.
I got out.
Yeah, so I see. What are you men doing here?
Good morning, Constable. We've come to find a friend of mine, a fellow countryman.
Upon hearing Malcolm's accent, Marshal Craig's eyes narrowed. The telegram he had received telling about the bank robbery in Cheyenne identified two of the men by name. One was Pogue, an Irishman, no first name available. And one, who spoke with a Scottish brogue, was Rab Malcolm.
You would be Rab Malcolm, I take it?
Hey, how'd you know that?
Son of a bitch! Malcolm! He knows about the bank robbery! That's how he knows about it!
Upon hearing Pogue shout, Marshal Craig went for his pistol, but he was too late. Pogue, Pettigrew, and McKenna all beat him to the draw. By now, all the other outlaws had drawn their pistols as well, and they stood there holding them at the ready as the smoke from three discharges floated up to form a blue-gray cloud just under the ceiling. Malcolm turned toward Biff Johnson just as the bartender was reaching for the shotgun that he kept under the bar.
I wouldn't if I were you.
Biff backed away from the bar.
You killed the marshal.
You saw it, barkeep. We really had no choice.
He was a good man.
Well, he's a dead man now.
Barkeep, I want you to do a favor for me.
Why should I do you a favor?
Because if you don't do that favor for me, I shall kill one of these ladies.
Malcolm pointed his pistol toward Lucy and Peggy.
And here is the interesting thing. I'm going to let you pick the one that I kill. What do you think, ladies? Which one of you will he pick?
You can't do that. I'm not going to choose which one you kill. Are you insane?
Insane? No, just curious as to which one you'll choose.
I'm not going to choose either one.
Never mind, I'll choose. And after I kill one of them, if you still won't do the favor, I will kill the other one. What do you think about that? And so, you see, it really doesn't matter which one you would have chosen, because I will kill them both if you force my hand. And if you still won't do the favor, then I will simply kill you and find someone else who will do me the favor.
What do you want?
I want you to go find Duff McAllister and bring him to me.
Duff McAllister? What do you want with him?
He is a countryman of mine.
Somehow I have the idea that you don't want him for a reunion of old friends.
Do you now? You're most astute. Now will you fetch McAllister for me? Or shall I choose one of these ladies to die?
No. No, there's no need for that. I'll go.
Good for you. You've made a wise choice.
And Falcon McAllister, don't forget to bring him along as well.
Aye, do please bring Falcon McAllister along as well. Mr. Shaw?
Yeah?
You have a loud voice. Kindly step out into the street and announce that we have two women as hostages. If anyone comes into the pub, we will kill them. If anyone makes a move towards us, we will kill the women.
All right.
Next door to the saloon was Megan's Dress Emporium. The proprietor and seamstress was Megan Parker, a very pretty young woman. Mrs. Finley, one of her customers, had just finished trying on a dress.
All you people, hear me now. We just killed your marshal. We got some business to take care of in this town, and we're going to stay here till that business is done. Don't nobody make any moves toward us, because we got two whores in here, and we'll kill them. In fact, just get the hell inside someplace now and stay there.
Oh, my Lord. Did he just say they killed Marshal Craig?
That's what he said.
He's Scottish, you say?
I'd recognize the brogue anywhere.
I'm sure it's Rab Malcolm. He is nothing if not persistent.
Malcolm, yeah, that's his name. I heard the marshal call him that.
And you say he has men with him?
Counting the Scotsmen, there are eight of them. One of them asked that I bring Falcon back as well. I think they want him as much as Malcolm wants you.
Aye, Falcon had spoken of the enemies he's made. And 'twould be Malcolm's way to recruit others by using Falcon as his bait. But Falcon isn't here. He left yesterday to go back home.
What are you going to do?
Did you not say that Malcolm has threatened the ladies if I don't appear?
Not exactly. He threatened them as a means of persuading me to come after you. I've kept my end of the bargain. I've come after you. I think that's all that's needed to keep Lucy and Peggy safe.
I wouldn't want to count on that. Malcolm is a man with fewer redemptive qualities than a bilge rat. I'd better go into town and get this settled. Once and for all.
You forget. He isn't alone.
I think there'll be no problem with the others. 'Tis obvious they want Falcon. They hold no animosity toward me.
Duff, you don't understand. People like that don't have to be angry with someone in order to kill him. They can kill a human being as easily as they can step on a bug.
He's right, Mr. McAllister. You being from a foreign country and all, maybe you don't understand what kind of polecats we have over here. I've known fellas that would as soon kill you as look at you. And this here bunch that's gathered around Malcolm strikes me just like that kind.
If you have another gun, I'll go in with you.
And I'm going too.
No, I appreciate the offer, but this is my fight.
Malcolm's men were taking advantage of Biff Johnson's absence by helping themselves to all the drinks they wanted. Malcolm was sitting at the table with Lucy and Peggy, and he wasn't drinking. And though he said nothing about it, he was getting concerned that the amount of alcohol the others were consuming would hinder their effectiveness.
Why do you want Duff McAllister?
You may not know this, lass, but I'm a deputy sheriff back in Scotland, and there he's wanted for murder. That's why I'm here.
You're a deputy sheriff, but you just robbed a bank and you just killed our marshal.
Well, it has gotten a bit complicated, let us say.
Who did Duff McAllister kill?
He killed the sheriff's three sons and two of my friends.
I don't believe it.
It is of no matter to me, lass, whether you believe it or not.
You talk just like him, but you aren't like him.
Hey, Malcolm, he's coming down the street.
Everyone get into position!
The others moved quickly to get into the positions they had already selected. Malcolm, with pistol in hand, moved to the bat wing doors and looked out into the street. Duff McAllister rode the remaining quarter mile into town. In contrast to the way the town was on Duff's previous visit, this time the street was absolutely empty. He stopped at the south end of Bowie Street, dismounted, and tied Sky off at a hitching rail. Then, as he walked down the middle of the street, he saw Rab Malcolm step out of Fiddler's Green.
Where's your cousin? The one they call Falcon?
He's gone. He stayed long enough to help me build my house. Then he went back home.
Ugh! And you've built a house, have you? 'Tis too bad you won't live long enough to enjoy it.
How is this to be? Are we to face each other down in the street?
Sure, and I think you may have been reading one of those sensational novels about the American West. Nah, we won't be facing each other down in the street. Well, that's not entirely true. You see, lad, I'll be facing you down, but there won't be anything you can do about it.
Unbeknownst to the two men, Megan Parker was watching from the window of her dress emporium, and she saw right in front of her store two men lying on the ground behind a watering trough, one at one end and one at the other. She knew that they were there to ambush Duff, and she wanted desperately to call out to him, but she knew that if she did, they would more than likely shoot her and her customer. She had to do something to let Duff know, but what? How could she warn him? Duff saw Malcolm turn and give a signal to someone. Another man came out of the saloon, holding a bar girl in front of him. It was Peggy.
Recognize this woman? I'm told she's a friend of the whore for whom you play the pipes at her funeral. Really, McAllister? You actually debased our national instrument by playing a dirge at the funeral of a whore! Be you without shame! That's enough to cost you a commission in the Black Watch!
I've resigned my commission!
Oh, I dare say you have.
Suddenly, Lucy appeared at the batwing doors of the saloon.
Peggy!
Get back inside!
Please! Let Peggy go!
Back inside!
Let the woman go!
Sure, I'll let the woman go.
Malcolm walked back to the saloon, but just before he stepped inside, he turned back to the man who was holding Peggy.
Let her go, Pettigrew.
Pettigrew let Peggy go, and she stood there for a moment, looking around as if unable to believe she'd been released.
Peggy, get off the street! Go into the mercantile!
As Peggy started across the street toward the mercantile store, Pettigrew and Malcolm went back into the saloon. Duff did not like the way this felt. He had a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach, and the hair stood up on the back of his neck. He drew his pistol and started running toward Peggy.
Peggy, get down!
Startled by Duff's sudden shout, Peggy stopped in the middle of the street and looked at him with an expression of confusion on her face. At that moment, Pettigrew stepped back out of the saloon.
No!
Duff saw blood and brain matter fly from Peggy's head as she fell face down into the dirt. Duff fired at Pettigrew and saw the look of shock on Pettigrew's face when the bullet hit him. Duff ran back across the street toward the nearest watering trough and leaped over it. Meanwhile, in the dress emporium window, Megan saw the two men behind the watering trough cock their pistols and start to move toward the edge. If Duff had no idea they were there, they would have the advantage over him. Dare she call out to him? Then she got an idea. Duff slithered on his stomach to the edge of the watering trough, then peered around it. He looked first toward the saloon to see if Malcolm was going to make another appearance, but the saloon was quiet. Then, looking across the street, he saw a woman in the window of the dress shop. It was Megan, the same pretty woman he had seen step down from the stagecoach the first day he rode into town. At first, he wondered what she was doing there. Then, he saw exactly what she was doing. Megan was holding the store's dressing mirror sideways, and looking in the mirror, Duff could see the reflection of two men lying on the ground behind the watering trough that was directly across the street from him. He watched as one started moving toward the end of the trough in order to take a look. Duff aimed his pistol at the edge of the trough.
McAllister! Maybe you have the right idea! Why don't you come back out into the street and I will as well? We can face each other down just as your cousin does. Oh, aye, I know all about your cousin. I've read of him in a dime novel. He must be a most courageous man. What do you say? Just you and I, alone in this street.
You don't expect me to believe that, do you?
Believe what?
That it would just be the two of us.
You think that because I have friends with me, that I may take unfair advantage of you, McAllister? Aye, well, sadly, that's probably true. Tell me, what does it feel like to know you won't live long enough to see the sun set tonight?
All the while Malcolm was talking, Duff was keeping one eye on the mirror and the other on the corner of the watering trough. Then his vigil was rewarded. Duff saw the brim of a hat appear, and he cocked his pistol. Looking in the mirror, he saw the man's face fall into the dirt, and the gun slip from his hand.
Carter! Carter!
Suddenly, the man at the other end of the trough stood up.
You son of a bitch! You killed my brother!
Duff took aim. Duff saw someone tumbling off the roof of a shop, shot by a hidden rifleman. The man had had a bead on Duff, and Duff hadn't seen him. Looking toward the sound of the rifle shot, Duff saw Biff Johnson. Smiling, Biff waved at him, then stepped back behind the corner of Curly Latham's barber shop. But there was someone behind the false front of Fiddler's Green. Duff returned fire, but the man had slipped back behind the false front, so he missed. But he kept his eye peeled on the false front, and when the man appeared to take another shot at Duff, Duff fired first. As McKenna went down, Duff saw two more men abandon their hiding places behind the corners of buildings. As they ran across the street, they started shooting toward Duff. Pogue pitched forward halfway across the street, falling across Peggy's body.
Malcolm! Malcolm, there's six of us down! There's only two of us left! Hey, wait a minute! He shot six times! He's out of bullets!
The person who was shouting suddenly appeared from the corner of another building, running across the street toward Duff.
McAllister!
Turning toward the voice, Duff saw Fred Matthews. Fred tossed a revolver toward him. Duff caught the revolver, then turned it around and shot his adversary at point-blank range.
Ah, what the hell? Where'd you get... Oh,
McAllister! Look over here!
Looking toward the front door of the saloon, Duff saw Malcolm coming outside. He held Lucy in front of him as a human shield.
No, Mr. McAllister, it's time to drop your gun. You fought well, but in the end, it appears I am the victor.
You know, Malcolm, I didn't think so.
Duff's bullet hit Malcolm right between his eyes. He dropped to the ground. Lucy stood there, unscathed. Before he headed back home, the entire town of Chugwater turned out to hail Duff as a hero. Duff had a few people of his own to thank. Biff Johnson for shooting the man off the roof who had a bead on him. Fred Matthews for tossing him a loaded revolver just in time. And of course, Megan Parker, who reminded Duff that Chugwater held the dance once a month in the ballroom of the Dunn Hotel. It was about a 30-minute ride back home, and as he approached, Duff saw a strange horse tied out front. Dismounting, he was examining the horse when Elmer Gleason stepped out onto the front porch.
Mr. McAllister! You got a visitor inside. He's a friend from Scotland.
Duff smiled broadly.
My word, could it be Ian McGregor?
He stepped up onto the porch and then went inside.
Ian?
It wasn't Ian. It was Angus Summerald. Summerald was standing by the stove, holding a pistol that was leveled to Duff.
Summerald.
You've been a hard man to put down, Duff Tavish McAllister. But the job is done now. Here now, lad, has the cat got your tongue?
I didn't expect to see you.
I didn't think you would. Would you be telling me where I might find my deputy?
Malcolm is dead.
I thought as much. Killed him, did you?
It seemed the thing to do.
There's an old adage, if you want something done right, do it yourself. I should have come after you a long time ago, instead of getting my sons and my deputies killed.
That night on Dunham Road, I was coming to give myself up. None of this need have happened. Your sons would still be alive. Sky would still be alive. But you were too blinded by hate.
We've talked enough, Duff McAllister.
Summerald cocked his pistol. Gleason had shot through the window, and the double-loaded 12-gauge shot had knocked Summerald halfway across the room.
You all right, Mr. McAllister?
I'm fine. My gratitude to you, Mr. Gleason.
Gleason came around to the front of the cabin and stepped in through the front door.
You know, seeing as how I saved your life, don't you think me and you might start calling each other by our Christian names?
Aye, Elmer. Your point is well taken.
Sorry about telling you he's one of your friends, but that's what he told me, and I believed him.
And yet you were waiting outside the window with a loaded shotgun.
Yeah, well, considering that the fella you went to meet in Chugwater was from Scotland, and he wasn't your friend, I just got to figuring maybe I ought to stand by, just in case.
Hey, I'm glad you did.
Gleason leaned the shotgun against the wall and looked at the blood that was on the floor of the cabin.
Yep, I reckon I better get this mess cleaned up for you.
Elmer, I'm sure you don't realize it, but you just did.
McAllister, Book 1, The Eagle's Legacy, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011. William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2012. The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Mort Shelby, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Sheeran, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Thomas Keegan, Michael Glenn, T. Terrence Asel Ford, Eric Mesner, Michael John Casey, Casey Platt, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Bradley Smith, Nanette Savard, Tim Pabone, Kimberly Gilbert, Tim Carlin, Nick DePinto, Patrick Busson, Yasmin Quazan, Gary Tell, Scott McCormick, Evan Casey, Drew Copus, Thomas Penny, Johan Detweiler, James Konacek, Colleen Delaney, James Lewis, and Rose Elizabeth Supan. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaway. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Brian Rogers. Graphic audio sound design by Patrick Stratton. Additional music by Johan Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed McAllister Book 1, The Eagle's Legacy, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, Preacher, The First Mountain Man, and Matt Jensen, The Last Mountain Man, as well as Elmer Kelton's The Man Who Rode Midnight. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-6220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
What kind of sheriff are you anyway?
Where will it stop? Who will stop the crime wave? Is our bank next? Will our citizens lie dead in the streets? Fire him!
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Some got blown. I got a whiff of powder or something.
I'll get Sanders. You stay here and stay armed. Don't know what's in the building or the bushes.
Having the right man wearing the star is important to a business like mine. I sell good times, Sheriff. There's lawmen that just don't like anyone having a good time in their towns, and then there's trouble.
Arrest the whole lot! Arrest Ralston! We can't have this! Doubtful's reputation is ruined!
For what?
For public indecency.
I don't know any law like that, Mr. Mayor.
Then invent one! I want them out of my town by morning!
Arrest them for lewd behavior. They were virtually disrobing the girl with their gaze, demeaning her, reducing her to their own animal lust.
Well, that's kind of nice, ma'am. But I'm still sheriff, far as I can figure, and I aim to get my badge back real quick now. And if I do, you'll get your money back. You put me in an opera house with naked women, and I cease to think. I don't even have a pipsqueak of a thought between my ears.
That is how we all are in the presence of the divine. You have eyes for ambrosia.
I hear you want to marry me. So, let's talk.
Name your deal.
I'll marry you for 1 month.
I don't think I could swing that.
What do you think I am? I don't believe in free love.
You're expensive, all right.
Cotton Pickens, Book 4, Massacre Mountain.
Available now in graphic audio.
Maybe I should go get myself baptized before they shut me down. Once you've been pushed underwater, wearing all white, they leave you alone.
What is the meaning of this?
No, Galatinov will leave this place alive.
You goddamn dogs!
Mother! Run, Mikhail! Run!
Get the boy!
Ah! Father.
I'm not your father, boy. Why do you persist in calling to ghosts?
I want to go home.
You are home.
Lieutenant Colonel Vogt, please come in.
I don't have much time. Field Marshal Rommel is waiting. I assume these are up to the minute?
Yes, sir.
We'll all toast the success of Panzer Army Africa on the banks of the Nile. Heil Hitler. Mein Gott.
Help me! Help me!
Kill it!
Hold up! Hurry! We've got to stop that beast! Go! Run it down!
It knows.
That man knows. We're in a minefield!
Shall I wait here, sir?
Yes, for now.
So Gallatin served with distinction in North Africa? That was 2 years ago. If he's been out of service since then, what makes you people think he can handle the job?
Because Major Gallatin is a professional. Major?
Come in.
Couldn't have picked a more desolate place, could you?
I couldn't find one. I am retired.
But, sir, can we at least brief you on what the mission involves?
All right.
There's an American agent in Paris.
Adam's his code name.
Your intelligence boys got a coded message from Adam a little more than 2 weeks ago. He said there's something big in the works. He was being watched, and he had information that had to be brought out of France by personal courier.
By 90 days after D-Day, we're planning on having more than 1 million boys over there to kick Hitler's ass. And we'd sure better know what's in the Nazis' hand.
Death. I'm sorry. Find someone else.
But sir...
I said I retired.
Let's talk, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Michael, I want you to go to Paris.
Is it that vital?
Yes. If the Gestapo is watching Adam so closely, you can be certain he has information they don't want getting out. With your special talents, there's a possibility you can get in and out under the nose of the Gestapo.
All right. But my parachute training's rusty.
Major! We're screwed! You want to scrub the drop?
I'm going!
Welcome to France. You'll be leaving grand entrances, don't you?
Any entrance I survive is grand.
We have to get you to a safe place. Are you ready to run?
Always.
From international best-selling author Robert R. McCammon, a compelling tale of espionage and supernatural horror. The Wolf's Hour. In rich, vibrant, graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.